Fear and Loving in Heaton Park. Part 2. Proceed with caution. I slammed the door and watched the vehicle speed away. The journey had been disturbing, astonishing even. It shouldn't have been a surprise. It wasn't like when my mum realised that rather than hanging around with a bad crowd, I was the bad crowd. Prior to setting off, in addition to 7 pints of Loony Brew, my companion, JC, had sunk 4 doubles. This wasn't purely willful indulgence. He'd planned to sneak the whiskey into the gig, but his clothes were not suited to concealment. The only option was his hoodie's front pouch. It wasn't snug. If he'd been a kangaroo, he'd have lost his offspring more often than scatterbrained Dave Cameron. Every time he moved, he chinked. Even raising his eyebrows made it sound like the pub window had been smashed. He had no chance of getting past security, so he downed them. It wasn't until we were in the car that I noticed the nuanced facial expressions and body language that belied a rather advanced state of inebriation. That, and the fact that he suddenly shouted, "Fucking hell, what's that?" The answer to this frenzied exclamation was, "It's a church tower in front of a large tree." We were in trouble. I should have perceived this earlier, but I'd been preoccupied. There are few places more conducive to relaxation and good conversation than a pub. Early doors, Saturday afternoon. Friday has inevitably been celebrated with alcohol and impetuous behaviour. And once the slightly jaded feeling, regret and fear have dissolved in the first few pints, you can sit back and enjoy the weekend. Safe in the knowledge that you have nothing to worry about until Monday morning. Well, apart from whether chronic liver disease and STIs are a problem or a badge of honour. This was not the case in the Fletcher Moss Didsbury. The atmosphere was tense. We had a problem. John the Architect, our host for the weekend's festivities, although he was not joining us at the gig, had been there the night before, and, despite being a Mancunian, savvy to the city's strange ways, it had taken him 5 hours to get home. Now, I know it's not really rock and roll, but here I was a few hours before a gig I'd been waiting 25 years for, and rather than being more excited than a suicide bomber approaching a checkpoint, I was terribly worried. It was unacceptable. I simply couldn't get to bed as late as 3. I'd be all tired and irritable the next day, which wouldn't do as I was having a late luncheon with Matron Pater. This conundrum had to be thrashed out. JC disagreed. He wanted to focus on what he excels at, having a good time all the time. Riley is rumoured to envy his lifestyle. He did offer a solution, but John was being completely unreasonable. Just because we were sleeping at his house and he was dropping us off, he was unwilling to pick us up, even after my hedonistic friend had informed him that he'd have done it. Leaving my associate to indulge his crapulence, me, John the Architect, and the inimitable Pete Taylor examined the option. We tried booking a taxi to pick us up about a mile from the gig, but they weren't taking orders. An extreme plan involving mountain bikes and a sister who lived near the park was dismissed due to a lack of mountain bikes and a sister. Similarly, an aerial extraction was discounted, as the man who owned the helicopter would surely have been over the legal limit for drink flying by 11. He seemed rather exuberant when I talked to him at 2. He also wanted cash up front, a lot of it. Remaining sober and driving to the gig was discarded, as Peter informed me that the car wouldn't be there when we got back. However, when I began to seriously consider the ultimate blasphemy, leaving the concert before the end of I Am the Resurrection, I knew that I needed to get a sense of perspective. JC was right. This was a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. Why worry about getting home? Something would turn up. It always did. I had to go with the flow and, heaven forbid, actually enjoy myself. Suitably chastised, I ordered a drink. A large one. John's car disappeared, and I turned to see JC narrowly avoid being run over by a slow-moving police car. Ditching him early seemed prudent. The prospect of attending a day festival alone was not appealing, but the atmosphere seemed benign, and, as I'd recently attended a course in applied friendship, I wouldn't have trouble acquiring acquaintances. Remember, a stranger is just a friend you haven't met. That or a serial killer. I'd simply avoid people holding large knives with manic eyes and blood-splattered clothing, which is easier said than done in Manchester. We set off towards the gig, and as the music began to waft across the park, I experienced a frisson of anticipation. Soon I'd be inside, standing in the rain, enjoying a weak, warm, flat lager from a half-empty plastic glass, and a mere 5 hours later, I'd be watching the roses. Life was good. And yet, on the horizon, storm clouds were gathering. There was one problem that I hadn't planned for. John had mentioned it, but I'd assumed he'd been lying. If I'd known what the future held, I wouldn't have been so quick to ditch the idea of bringing my rucksack and waterproofs, no matter how much I looked like a rambler. I'd also have quit writing and started making vast amounts of money advising frightened, inadequate people how to live their lives.